365.
There will be a veterans protest meeting and speak out to make a public declaration of opposition to war with Iraq and rejection of restrictions on civil liberties at home. The meeting will take place at Local 1199 Martin Luther King Jr. Labor Center, 310 West 43rd Street in Manhattan. Featured speakers include Ron Daniels from the Center for Constitutional Rights, Charles Sheehan Miles from Gulf War Veterans for Common Sense, Colleen Kelly from 911 Families for Peaceful Tomorrows, Ellen Barfield from Veterans for Peace, and David Klein from Vietnam Veterans Against the War. For more information, call 718-826-1789. That's 718-826-1789.
On Saturday, November 9th, at the Greenwich School, 116 West 11th Street, off 6th Avenue, Filipino youth organizations from the tri-state area present Sumi Sigaw, Common Ground, a youth festival centered on the themes of building community and bridging the gaps between Filipinos and Filipino-Americans. The festival will include performances and workshops. There will be a small admission fee. To reserve a ticket in advance, volunteer, or to get more information, call 212-741-6806, extension 2. That's 212-741-6806, extension 2.
The African Poetry Theater, located at 176-03 Jamaica Avenue in Queens, is hosting an open mic poetry night Friday, November 8th, from 8 to 11 p.m., hosted by Big Brother Wayne. There is a small admission fee. And on Sunday, November 10th, from 1 to 3 p.m., African Ministries presents Heritage Sunday with guest speaker Reverend Eshakamusa Barashango, speaking on the topic of reparations, the Bible, and the Church. Admission is free. For more information, call 718-523-3312. That's 718-523-3312.
On Thursday, November 14th at 7:30 p.m., come to the Brecht Forum, 122 West 27th Street, 10th floor in Manhattan, for a roundtable discussion on building a movement for media justice, including representatives from FAIR, Media Channel, Indie Media, Community Broadcasting, and others. For more information about this and other events at the Brecht Forum, call 212-242-4201. That's 212-242-4201.
On Wednesday, November 20th, the Cinema Arts Center, located at 423 Park Avenue in Huntington, Long Island, will present the film Fatal Fallout, examining the dangers of exposure to low-level radiation and the no longer unimaginable what-if scenario of a terrorist attack on a nuclear plant just 30 miles outside New York City. The film will be shown at 9:30 p.m. and at 7:15 p.m. there will be a talk by Gary Null. For more information, call 631-423-7611. That's 631-423-7611.
This has been a list of events from the WBAI Community Bulletin Board.
Let us know what's going on in your community. Write to us at least 2 weeks in advance at WBAI, 120 Wall Street, 10th floor, New York, New York, 10005.
Or you can fax us at least 2 weeks in advance at 212-747-1698. That's 212-747-1698. I'm Victor Takewall.
I'm Vajra Kilgour.
And I'm Evelyn Andino Rosa.
Have a great day.
It's 4:59 in New York City. You are tuned to listener-sponsored, commercial-free community radio, WBAI, at 99.5 FM. Coming up next at 5 o'clock, we'll be Taking Aim, produced by Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen, the WBAI Evening News at 6 p.m. At 7 o'clock, Tahrir, Voices of the Middle East, at home and abroad with Dr. Barbara Nimri Aziz. At 8 p.m., national election coverage begins. Pacifica news briefs at the top of the hour from 8 p.m. through 11 p.m. Jazz Sampler with Bill Farrar, usually heard from 9 until 11 o'clock, will be preempted this evening. 9 o'clock through 11, WBAI will provide local team coverage of today's election. It's 5 p.m. and you can join us on the internet at WBAI.org. We're 99.5 FM, listener-sponsored, and commercial free. Stay tuned for Taking Aim.
This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen, coming to you Tuesday, November 5th, 2002. Luis Ignacio Lula da Silva of the Workers' Party, former factory worker, labor union leader, and political prisoner, won by a landslide in the Brazilian elections. Lula won in every region of the country, 52.5 million votes in the country of 175 million people. It was a true landslide, historic. Lula of the Workers' Party. Now it's our turn. That is what the workers, the 800 workers at three industrial plastic plants in the state of Santa Catarina wrote in an open letter to Lula. Now it's our turn. We're out here. Lula, we of the PT, make good on your promises. Now, Lula, this is the moment. Deliver to us and not to the powerful elite that has run our country into the ground. But Lula Light, that is what the press in Brazil has been saying, and today our program is Lula Light, Crossing the Class Line. Why do we say that? It's a program that was scheduled to air October 8th, but was preempted by the congressional hearings for the War Powers Act. Ralph, give us a notion of why we say Lula Light, Crossing the Class Line.
It's not only the Brazilian press, Maya. In the New York Times on the 29th of October, Larry Roeder's article is headlined, Leftist Brazilian Victor Moves to Calm the Nervous Markets. De Silva declares, the times demand austerity. Brazil's president-elect Luiz Ignacio Lula da Silva of the Workers' Party moved quickly today to assure the financiers and calm financial markets that have displayed nervousness about his assumption of power, and he promised that Brazil will not default on the public debt or embark on public spending. Quote, our government will honor all the established contracts, will control inflation, and will maintain a posture of complete fiscal responsibility, unquote, De Silva said in a wide-ranging speech. The difficulty is that Brazil will be confronting demands for austerity in the use of public money and an implacable combat against corruption, which translates into preventing any action on the program of the Workers' Party itself. And the article continues that the value of the Brazilian currency has fallen more than 30% against the American dollar, and the vast mass of the population supporting Lula are now exposed to ever-deepening immiseration, unemployment, starvation, and great poverty. It's the world's ninth largest economy, and yet half of Brazil's obligations are linked to the dollar and an enormous debt burden that has risen above $250 billion. But as the New York Times points out, he's going to have to control his population and those who expect him to deliver for them, quote-unquote. He is preparing the population for this very eventuality, and the article describes how Lula, quote, has signaled to the International Monetary Fund and lending institutions that Brazil will maintain its obligations, will preserve payment of the debt, and he has told his population they will have to like it. And here's the response, according to the Times, of Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill, who states, I'm glad the uncertainty is over. We know now what we are going to get from Lula. Foreign investors will continue monitoring De Silva's public declarations and performances until he assures us he is not a crazy person. He's going to reassure skeptical markets by naming a transition team involving the former bankers and cabinet ministers of the far right. Quote, they will follow the policies of Cardoza and all those that they have in place, stated Mr. O'Neill today. They are the key to Latin America.
Lula Light, Crossing the Class Line. Lula, the Workers' Party, established 20 years ago through mass strikes in the industrial base around Sao Paulo, led by Lula, Lula of the steel workers.
And Lula indeed was the principal figure of the dispossessed, the impoverished, the vast Brazilian working class, with its program of immediate cancellation of the debt, the mass demonstrations and strikes that brought Brazil's ruling class to a standstill, the demands for national ownership of the means of production, the insistence that the budget that goes into the coffers of the military and the tiny oligarchy in Brazil should instead be used for the uplifting of the vast majority of the population of the country. That which brought the Workers' Party into national prominence, which gave it the capacity to take office and indeed power, has now been met by a leadership in the presence of Lula, who is beating a fast retreat into the arms of the very IMF and World Bank that have pauperized Brazil.
115 million Brazilians were casting ballots in Brazil, and on October 27th, the day of Lula's 57th birthday, there will be a runoff between Lula of the Workers' Party and José Serra, who came in second place with hardly a quarter of the vote, as three-quarters of the population voted against austerity, voted against the extension of the Free Trade Agreement of the Americas, voted for employment, voted for a better life for all. Three-quarters of the Brazilian population sending a clear message that they were fed up with the plans of Cardoso, the president of Brazil from the Social Democratic Party. They were fed up with the United States' imposition of austerity, of IMF programs, of privatization. Yet, when Lula comes to victory, as he is expected to, on October 27th, as José Serra will not be able to band together any coalition, any opposition to the candidate of the workers, Party, what is it that will Lula be doing when he becomes president?
Maya, the ruling class in the United States is absolutely schizoid and ambivalent about the phenomenon of Lula and the problem of the Workers' Party and its mass base. On the one hand, they understand that the rank-and-file expectations of the workers in Brazil, of the vast majority of the population, are for dramatic economic and social change. On the other, they look to Lula, who is beating a retreat into their arms, as their only secure vehicle for containing the population and indeed for policing them. The New York Times on July 7th had written, "Skepticism greets leftists' makeover in Brazil." And it states that in recent weeks, the Brazilian currency, the real, has hit one record low after another. The stock market has dived, driven by fears that Mr. Da Silva and his party are still firebrand revolutionaries at heart, and will govern that way if he becomes president of Latin America's largest country. And the article goes on to say that Lula has given constant assurances, "I've changed a great deal." He states, "The Workers' Party is moderated," Lula assured them, and he stated that he has embraced the program of the International Monetary Fund, he has accepted the obligation to continue to pay the debt, and he will take no steps that will undermine the stability of finance capital in Brazil. And indeed, in the Financial Times on September 26th, Kenneth Maxwell attacks the Wall Street Journal and others in the Financial Times who have looked upon the advent of Lula as a disaster. He says Lula falls foul of a foreign fantasy. When it comes to Brazil, fantasy reigns supreme within the International Monetary Fund and Wall Street. How else can you explain the demonization of Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, presidential candidate of the Workers' Party, or the ridiculous Lula meter invented by Goldman Sachs to predict the value of the Brazilian currency against his standing in the public opinion polls? And he goes on to say, "Da Silva's Workers' Party notwithstanding, someone should tell Wall Street and the IMF that the Cold War is over, and they better pray that Da Silva gains an outright victory next Sunday. With the real in free fall, the last thing Brazil and the international financial system needs is a scorched earth campaign stretching to a second round vote. It's hardly something that the IMF, with its $30 billion Brazil bailout package at stake, should be hoping for. The truth is that Brazil's current vulnerability has been created by the IMF, the Financial Times writer states. The premiums were bound to rise at a time of electoral uncertainty. The interest payments tied to the value of the real or indexed to the dollar are bound to be difficult regardless of whether Brazil maintains a budget surplus or not. And to blame it on Da Silva is ridiculous. We need him. He is the vehicle. The past failures, as the Workers' Party has indicated, have been the responsibility of the IMF. The PQ has used the past decade to modernize its ideology, to move towards the political center. For 20 years, party members have been elected to the state and local offices. Now we see that Lula has maintained open links to President Fernando Henrique Cardoso, and he will be the vehicle for preserving that rule. Wall Street analysts and IMF bureaucrats should leave Brazilian politics to its 115 million voters and stop confusing fact and fantasy. Lula has come of age as a vehicle of the IMF and the World Bank.
As the Washington Post stated on Sunday, September 22nd, in its article, as his country stumbles, the practical Lula soars, and the candidate taps into Brazilians' desire for respect. In fact, this article shows the collaboration of Lula and those who support him in the Workers' Party, their collaboration with the national bourgeoisie in Brazil, as represented by José Alencar, a textile tycoon, also connected to the evangelical religious movement, that Lula chose as his running mate for vice president. And as Alencar says, quote, Lula has matured and I wouldn't be here otherwise. In other words, what he is referring to is the fact that Lula has said that he will continue to pay the IMF debt, that non-payment of the debt is no longer an option. And let us look at Brazil, where Lula, as the Washington Post said, is putting himself forward as the champion of, quote, Brazilian dignity. Now, the economy of Brazil represents 40% of the economic base of Latin America. Brazil has a population that's larger than Russia's and is an economy that is either somewhere, estimates say it's the eighth largest economy in the world, and others say it's the tenth. But still, it is among the top economies of the world. As Lula says, though, quote, we cannot allow others to treat us as if we were a banana republic. He is referring to the international campaign to sell off the national resources of Brazil that has been the key focus of the Cardoso regime over the past 8 years. The infusion of foreign capital with the sell-off of the oil industry and other significant resources, the telephone companies, the electric power. And what has this meant for the people of Brazil? A lot has been made of the fact that prior to the sell-off and the infusion of international capital, it was very difficult to even get a telephone in Brazil. But since now it is easy to get a telephone, but the cost of service has gone up 3,700%. The cost of water and sewer, 420%. The cost of electric light service, 368%. And the cost of urban transportation, 300%. Now, in a country such as Brazil, where in 1993, 44% of the population, almost half of the population, lived on less than a dollar a day, you can imagine what it means when the cost of water and sewer is up 420% and the cost of turning on your light bulb goes up 368%. It means that you cannot afford the very basic necessities of daily life. Now, also what has happened in the economy as a result of the Cardozo regime is that unemployment has risen 50% in many of the sectors, and real workers' income has decreased 10% in just the last 5 years. And even though the minimum wage is going to go up, if you account for inflation, the minimum wage of the Brazilian working class, of the poorest of the poor, those who even have work and aren't in the informal sector, which has also increased, that means peddlers and those who don't have regular jobs, the minimum wage will decrease when inflation is taken into account.
Not to mention the impact on that vast underclass that inhabits the favelas, the enormous slums of Rio de Janeiro and of Sao Paulo and the other major cities of Brazil, where there is an army of street children who live in the streets and who are targeted by the police for execution on behalf of merchants, a constant phenomenon of the mass pauperization of Brazil, the very thing that the Workers' Party was designed to make part of a horrible past history. And yet we are told by the New York Times that Lula now favors elegantly tailored suits, tries hard to smile at his audiences, and is in constant consultation with Fernando Bezerra, president of the National Confederation of Industry. And the New York Times goes on to point out that De Silva has stated he will not default on Brazil's mounting foreign debt, a fundamental change from the position of the Workers' Party.
It is a debt of $250 billion.
And that debt has been paid multiple times over. What happens with the debt of the impoverished countries is that the banks have been making loans to the military and to the oligarchy. They disappear into Swiss banks. They are used for the Ponzi schemes of enriching the local oligarchy, and the workers and the mass of the population then pay the banks. The compounded interest rates would make the mafia blush. The original principal has been paid off so many times, and yet the debt continues to impoverish and pauperize the country. De Silva has stated, Lula, he will never default on Brazil's mounting debt. He is not against the free trade zone in the Americas. He says Brazil will join it, and he will see that it is truly fair and just, by which he means that it should include Cuba, quote unquote. And Mr. De Silva, the New York Times reports, saw his popularity surge with the Workers' Party's opposition to the free markets, the privatization, and the deregulation, the very policies that he is in the course of embracing.
What Lula has pledged to do is to slow the march of globalization. That is, as he told thousands in the agricultural city of Uberaba, 300 miles northwest of Rio de Janeiro, quote, "We need to have the courage to fight against the rich countries and tell them that we do not accept the impositions they wish to force on us." Now, this is the verbiage. Lula speaks to the masses. He was one of the masses. He suffered an industrial accident which deprived him of one of his fingers. He went to jail to fight against the dictatorship. He led mass rallies of tens and tens of 80,000 people during the big struggles of the late 1970s and the early 1980s. Lula was the hero of the people, the man to whom they turn. And now, what is he doing? Now he is the man who's going to lead the IMF plans for austerity. Will he be able to do so? Because when Lula speaks, he speaks to the people about health care, about education, and yet, as part of the IMF policies, the stranglehold of the IMF, he will have to keep a cap, a lid on public expenditures. And according to the Brazilian Constitution, there is a limit on how much can be spent on state, federal, and local expenditures for public employment.
Actually, Maya, the consequence of a submission to the IMF plan is very clear, because the IMF has granted $30 billion to Brazil, with $6 billion given now, and the balance to be weighted to see how the government performs, and the performance is dependent upon using this money to pay back the banks. So what the IMF is doing is subsidizing the banks, and the consequence of this is to put a total cap on any public spending in Brazil.
Well, it's interesting, Ralph, that the IMF, in giving $30 billion, which is the largest IMF loan ever given yet in its history, that it's giving $30 billion, $6 billion now, and $24 billion contingent upon what it sees, the outcome of the presidential election. But this coming year, Brazil is expected to pay off to foreign banks, Citibank primarily among them, $25 billion of principal and interest payments. And so there goes the $30 billion.
Well, actually, not only that, but the it means that there's a de facto total destruction of the currency. 20% inflation is only the official rate. It's multiples of that for the working poor. They have the destruction of their ability to purchase. They have the wiping out of the meager earnings that they have, and the interest rates are multiplying at the same time. So in essence, what is being done is that the classic formula of the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank is being imposed upon Brazil, and the vehicle for its imposition is Lula. Lula, who maintains a populist rhetoric as he embraces the program of the class enemies of the mass of the working people, who are the members in the rank and file of the Workers' Party, the PT, of Brazil.
Let us look at some of the things that Lula has been saying to his base, to the people, the impoverished people of Brazil, and to the working class. The Financial Times on September 23rd wrote of a Lula speaking tour in Managuera, and he was talking about his health care plan, and this is an impoverished neighborhood of Rio de Janeiro. He got a quote, he earned a roaring applause when he proposed doubling basic health care coverage within 3 years, creating first aid and emergency rescue services, and expanding free medication. Mr. De Silva, according to the Financial Times, told community leaders they would have a voice in shaping health care policies and in monitoring service quality. Quote, this is a health care program that will be implemented not by a government, but a society, he said. And there you have Lula speaking. He says again, this government had 8 years to prove itself. It's time to give Lula a chance. Now, a chance is what the people will give, but they expect that their basic health care coverage will double within 3 years, that first aid will be created, that there'll be emergency services and free medication. But is that the case when Lula must impose austerity? There are examples of this in Porto Alegre, where the Workers' Party has been in leadership, and they have what is called the participatory budget. And yet, when in Porto Alegre, with the participatory budget, as Otto Wermenchuk, who was for 1 year a counselor of the participatory budget, says, all that had happened was he was participating in, quote, participatory austerity. He said, the participatory budget is a means to integrate the leaders of the popular movements into the state machinery. Now, Wermenchuk told a harrowing tale. He had been elected to the participatory budget Council in his town of Guayaba, which is in the greater metropolitan region of Porto Alegre, because he wanted to bring a health care clinic to the 50,000 people in his district of Cohab. Quote, "We had to do something. The situation was catastrophic," he said. Now, for over 2 years, he participated. There were meetings upon meetings, but all they became were briefing sessions for the elected officials, he said. And he said, because the money was siphoned off to pay back the foreign debt. In fact, only 17% of the city budget was available for social services, which each of the organizations were bidding against each other to get a piece of that tiny pie. So after 2 years, nothing ever came of his participation in the participatory budget committees. And what he concluded at the end of that time, quote, "I simply felt crushed. I felt I could be more effective if I mobilized people independently in the streets for our health care center." Now, how will the people of Managuera feel with their expectations of free medication, of rescue services, and now Lula will once again have to come to them and say, austerity must be imposed? What will he say to them?
And we have to see how it is that the IMF blackmail of Brazil was brought into play. U.S. Treasury Secretary Paulo Neal arrived in Brazil after visiting Uruguay and Argentina, where collapse was also in progress. And it was on that occasion that they announced that a new IMF loan to Brazil to the tune of $30 billion, $6 billion to be dispersed now and the rest after the elections if the government performed, was brought into play. Le Monde in France pointed out that, quote, by blocking 80% of the announced funds, the new administration, when brought into power, would be faced with a clear message of the IMF to the Workers' Party and to Lula. The IMF will not hesitate to stop the disbursement of any funds if the structural adjustment plan of the IMF and the World Bank is not strictly followed. And during his trip to Brasilia on Monday, the U.S. Treasury Secretary brought a message. He applauded the commitment by Lula to maintain a basic budget surplus of 3.75% of GDP and a public sector deficit. That is to say, to accept the complete continued payment of the foreign debt and to gut any possibility of social services. On August 8th, the newspapers announced that the $30 billion accord had been reached with Lula and the government of Fernando Henrique Cardoso and the IMF itself. Alan Metzer, the former advisor of President Bush, commented on the accord, "Hey, if I were an investor in Brazil, I would say we've got the chance to withdraw our money now in favorable conditions," unquote. And and Le Monde comments, this is someone who knows what he's talking about. We begin to see the nature of this operation. We begin to see what the role of Lula will be under the regime of the IMF and the World Bank. And that is the significance of Lula assuring the military that he will cooperate with the military, that he will ensure stability, that he will be the instrument of order in Brazil. We have to make the analogy to many other countries in which the national bourgeois leadership of nominal independent countries has capitulated to world imperialism. You cannot have a movement for the enfranchisement of the population and the rescue of its resources and its economy for its own use at the same time capitulate to the demands and the dictates of global capital. When the African National Congress assumed office without power in Brazil, it embraced the policies of the IMF and the World Bank. There is now 60% unemployment in South Africa. The favelas of South Africa, the slums of Soweto, now have almost 6 million people instead of 2 million people in them. Pauperization and health care have increased enormously. COSATU has been pushed into opposition to the government as the policies of the ANC in subordination to the World Bank and the IMF result in the pauperization of the many. You can integrate the beaches in Durban in South Africa, but as long as Harry Oppenheimer owns the mines and the economy is in the hands of the IMF, the World Bank, and the world's corporations, Africans will work as they did under apartheid in slave labor conditions. The same applies to Brazil. The same is being acted out in Brazil. The role of Lula is analogous to that of all those who capitulate to the dictates of capital and who abandon their base. There is no squaring the circle. It is a struggle for survival. It is a struggle for control. And that struggle is on the line in Brazil today. We should only have an examination of the general role of the trade policies of the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank.
As Ralph was mentioning before, the support of the financial markets for Lula, I'd like to bring at this moment into the show two quotes that I found significant that I found in the Financial Times in an article from October 2nd. Roberto Setubal, president of Itaú, Brazil's second largest private sector bank and the latest heavyweight from the local financial sector, according to the Financial Times, to play down fears of the victory of Mr. Da Silva, said, quote, "He is not a revolutionary. He is pragmatic and will be more cautious than the market thinks." And as the Financial Times said, some businesses are warming to the prospect. Quote, "The PT's proposal to boost consumer markets will be great for international companies," said Paulo Feldman, director of the Sao Paulo Chamber of Commerce. Because the PT leaders held extensive meetings with private sector officials and mainstream economists in the past few weeks. And Mr. Da Silva confirmed, according to the Financial Times in Great Britain, that if elected, he would appoint a central banker with views in tune with those of the market. And what they're referring to is the central bank, which sets the rates, such as the Federal Reserve does here in the United States. So as you see, Lula is making his openings, not only with Alencar and the national bourgeoisie, but he is moving, as Ralph mentioned, to the Cardoso regime itself. Now, you have to remember that it was in 1999, only 3 years ago, that there was a large movement in the Workers' Party to which Lula had to bend. And this was a large movement that created mass mobilizations throughout the country, huge mobilizations that shut the country down. And the slogan was, "Out FHC," referring to Fernando Cardoso, "Out IMF." "Out IMF, out FHC," meaning the austerity plans, the Real plan, and all the privatization plans of the Cardoso regime over the past 8 years. So here you have the basis of the Workers' Party and the COOT, the Confederation of Trade Unions, mobilizing the entire country around the slogans of "Away with austerity," "Out IMF," "Out IMF."
And actually, Maya, at Porto Alegre last July, where there was this vast organization of
non-governmental organizations,
so-called civil society, non-governmental organizations, calling for the same class collaboration that Lula is now attempting to implement in Brazil, the same scenario of moderating or reforming the policies of the IMF were put forward. That is to say, accepting the basic conditions of the IMF and World Bank and seeking so-called social clauses that would presumably soften the impact. But in reality, if we examine the performance and the behavior of the program of NAFTA, the so-called free trade agreement that the global corporations design, it becomes transparent as to what they really mean for the mass of the population. The global corporations design policies that they call trade agreements, such as NAFTA, Maastricht, or the MAI, but in reality they are not trade agreements. They are strategic assaults upon the resources of the planet and the living standards of its inhabitants. Look at NAFTA. Since its imposition, the global corporations centered in the United States eliminated over 500,000 jobs. The wages of Mexican workers in the manufacturing sector fell 40% within Mexico and are 1/11th of what is paid for equivalent work to workers in the United States. Work was concentrated along the border where U.S. company produced goods for the U.S. market. The Zenith plant, now in Reynosa, was sent over from the United States so workers could be paid 69 cents an hour. That's what the meaning of the so-called trade agreement says.
You are listening to Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen, coming to you over WBAI 99.5 FM in New York, listener-sponsored radio, and on the Internet at www.wbai.org. And contact us at takingaim@pacbell.net. Now, that's our email address, takingaim@pacbell.net, or you can call WBAI to get our phone number, which is 707-552-9995. And now to return to Lula Light crossing the class line.
Maya, in an important article in The Organizer, a labor and socialist newspaper based in San Francisco that is linked to the Open World Congress for Workers International and the International Liaison Committee for Workers International, an article by Nubia Matos Becerra from Sao Paulo. The raucous cheers of 150 delegates and participants filled the union halls in Sao Paulo. The chants, "The Workers' Party must remain a workers' party," punctuated the events. The delegates had come from across Brazil, from as far away as the Amazonas, for the national conference for the demand that Lula break with the IMF organizing committees, and they ended the meeting with what has become a defiant declaration. The Partido dos Trabajadores, or the PT, the Workers' Party of Brazil, is in the midst of what is called the fight for its 20-year-old life. Founded in 1980, the PT was created as a party of and for the working class of Brazil. This year's election will be the best chance the longtime PT presidential candidate has of reaching the presidency, but on what program and at whose service? Desperate hope of a nation of working Brazilians, millions of whom are below the poverty line, was personified in the former trade union leader, Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, or Lula. But in gaining, in the name of gaining votes and of broadening its base, the PT has formed an alliance with the Liberal Party, a conservative, religiously connected party opposed to all land reform, which favors flexibilization of the labor law, which means removing all support for wages and all of the protections that the workers had fought for and obtained. It supports the free trade agreement. It supports the IMF. In short, it embodies everything that the Workers' Party had opposed. And the right-wing politics of the PL businessmen that Lula chose as his vice presidential running mate, José Alencar, has been understood by the workers' base of the party as a betrayal of everything that the PT stands for, which indeed it is. That is the meaning of the response of delegates of the Workers' Party and of the Confederation of Trade Unionists from one end of Brazil to the other, who support the demands of the Workers' Party from its inception and who are demanding of Brazil's Workers' Party leader Lula that he not betray the party, that he not betray the program, that he not become a vehicle for the pauperization that is afoot, and that he not become the instrument of the military with whom he is forming an alliance.
I'm glad you brought up the issue of flexibilization, and because the COOT, the Confederation of Trade Union, has been mobilizing actively on this issue because it had been proposed in the Congress Dornell's Law, which is a law that would revise the country's labor code, gutting all of the industry-wide master collective bargaining agreements. Now, we have in the United States, company by company, bargaining, and the auto industry was able to win through mass mobilizing. The United Auto Workers was able to develop what they call pattern bargaining, that is, bargaining with the big three automakers and setting the stage for what the working conditions would be throughout the industry. And in France, there is national collective bargaining agreements across the engine industries, which affects each of the companies, and so it is in Brazil. And what Dornell's law would do is gut that, which means workers are weakened. They would have to bargain company by company. So this is a very big effort in Brazil to make sure that, and the 50 trade unions who were at the CUT in Brazil in October of 1998, met to discuss how they could prevent the institution of such flexibilization. And in particular, the government at that time was adopting what's called the Bank of Work Hours. And that was a law that Cardoso instituted that would deregulated the official work week. As you know, there is overtime here in the United States, and when you work more than 40 hours a week. And in Brazil, the work week is based on 44 hours of work. But with the creation of the Bank of Work Hours, instead of looking at how much you work week by week, it's going to look at how much you work over the year. In other words, your work hours, instead of getting time and a half after you've worked, given overtime in a week or even overtime in a day, it depends on how you work in a year. So you can imagine what that creates. It can create a total flexibility for the bosses.
Maya, as the National Committee of the Confederation of Workers in Brazil in its declaration stated, they want Lula with the politics of the PT, what the Workers' Party has stood for historically. Funding for education, funding for housing, decent wages, agrarian reform, distribution of the land to the poor, to the peasants. And what this requires is a break, as the declaration states, with the strangling policies of the IMF. The declaration stated, we must make clear that Brazil will never become the next star pupil of the IMF Washington cabal, as José Alencar, the vice presidential candidate chosen by Lula, proposes. How can the PT even consider this course after the destruction of neighboring IMF compliant Argentina? Isn't it clear that the handwriting in Argentina is on the Brazilian wall? Brazil must stop paying this debt, which will exceed $30 billion in interest payments alone next year. Lula must stop paying this extortionist debt and attend to the needs of the starving, of the millions of hungry, homeless, and landless people in Brazil. The PT can never become respectable in the eyes of the IMF except by turning its back on the mass worker and popular base and suppressing it. In France, when the ruling Socialist Party formed the governmental alliance with the right-wing president Jacques Chirac at the point of trying to outdo Chirac, as Lula appears to be doing with Cardoso, 40% of the population of the workers stayed home, an unprecedented phenomenon in France. That is what the rulers have in mind for Brazil, that the base of the Workers' Party will demoralize, will be alienated, will abandon it, will give up, will accept defeat. But the National Committee of the Confederation of Workers declared that they will never agree to this, that they are fighting for their party. We are against this alliance with the bourgeoisie. We're against it before. We're against it now. Alencar is the IMF, and the free trade agreement means the destruction of the workers' movement in Brazil. We will never accept this alliance. We will never tolerate this capitulation. We will gather our signatures. We will maintain our organization campaign. We will mobilize our people. We will take to the streets. We will never surrender. the declaration of the National Committee of the Confederation of Workers of Brazil in response to what is facing them at this moment.
Because they have a clear example of what will happen with the policies of flexibilization, such as the bank of work hours. There was a pilot test of it, and the Auto Workers Union in Campinas described their two-year experience with this pilot project, the bank of work hours. They showed how the average work week rose to 56 hours at peak production times and then dropped substantially when inventories piled up. The Volkswagen workers in the city of Resende, for example, saw their wages drastically reduced, given that overtime pay, which they were no longer entitled to, had been a key component of their total yearly earnings. So this is what the workers are facing, and their campaign was no to the bank of work hours, such as no to privatization. Now, the campaigns against privatization have been foremost with the Workers' Party, but what Lula has come out and said is that he will not try to renationalize the privatized industries, that he will perhaps try to slow down privatization. But you can see that the masses of people, such as the people in the landless peasant movement, the Sem Terra movement, they have been organizing work, the families, 3,000 families in a camp, such as in the northeastern state of Itabuna. And they, what they do is they invade idle private land. And while they're saying, quote, "We will support Lula, but we have to press him to meet our demands." That is the statement of Joelson de Oliveira, a Sem Terra radical. Now, he lives on a 900-hectare coca estate that the movement seized 9 years ago. How will Lula confront the MST movement when it takes over abandoned property and confronts the large agricultural holder, corporate holders throughout Brazil? What will Lula say to the base of the impoverished landless peasants?
Maia, O Trabalho, which is the largest left current in the Brazilian Workers' Party and is the section of the Fourth International in Brazil, has been one of the leaders of this mobilization of the rank and file at the base of the Workers' Party to maintain the program of the party and to challenge capitulation to the IMF. And it made a statement in which it says the IMF wants to dictate the policies of the next government, which is why it demanded that the candidates should be all involved in the loan negotiations. The current finance minister, Pedro Malan, on announcing the IMF packet, insisted on the necessity of all presidential candidates formally expressing commitment to the IMF and its accords. And this took place, as was noted in the public memo of the COOT on the accord, that the after the announcement after the presidential elections, even more sacrifices will be demanded in the future. What this means is greater unemployment, the deterioration of living conditions for millions of workers, and in order for us to find definitive solutions, it will be necessary to do this by suppressing the workers itself. That is the context. That is the meaning. And it should be understood as well that this takes place as the main newspapers of the ruling class describe what is really happening in the finance, bank, and corporate economy across the world. On the 6th of October, last Sunday, The Observer in London ran a remarkable article, "Global Crash Fears as German Bank Sinks." Stockbrokers around the world are braced for a calamitous week as alarm mounts over a looming 1930s-style global financial crisis. A leaked email about the creditworthiness of Commerzbank, Germany's third-largest bank, yesterday increased fears of the international stock market malaise, which is exploding into a full-fledged banking crisis. Commerzbank has lost a quarter of its value in 1 week, and it raises the specter of Kreditanstalt, the Austrian bank that collapsed in 1931, sparking a global depression. U.S. stock markets have fallen for 6 consecutive weeks to their lowest levels in 5 years. European markets have collapsed even further, wiping out half of the value of European corporations in this year alone. Japan is struggling to save its banking system, riddled with bad debt after a decade of recession, and now the German economy is threatening to follow. Quote, and this is the Observer in London, there are strong parallels to the 1930s. After an unsustainable new era fake boom, says Avinash Persaud, managing director for economics and research at the State Street Bank, the stock market decline is not just steep, it is taking 3 years to reach the bottom, and Commerzbank being affected is a measure of the severity. The crisis is such that banks from country to country are having a snowball effect, which affects their stability and challenges the durability of the capitalist economy. In the U.S., the concern is that Alan Greenspan, chairman of the U.S. Federal Reserve, no longer has room to cut interest rates as the economy falls into recession. The Bush administration has but two lines of action, tax relief for the rich and reliance on the Federal Reserve. Both now are without any effect, stated U.S. economist John Kenneth Galbraith in an interview with The Observer.
And in fact, Ralph, the stock market in the United States has lost $8 trillion of market, speculative wealth, you might say. But it's wealth that upon which people depend for their pensions as they bought into the 401ks, the mythology of each person can manage their own pension and absolving the corporations of maintaining the pensions that people so rightly deserve after their work.
And
phrases such as caving in and deep depths of uncertainty and tremendous disillusionment are the words of Merrill Lynch strategists and other people in the financial pages, because the London stock market lost 20% in just the last quarter, and the German stock market, the Frankfurt DAX, the main stock market index, fell by 46%. Percent this year, with no sign of the decline coming to end. So throughout Latin America, what you have is the people are rising up in Cochabamba, in Bolivia. People rose up against the privatization of the water company. And in Peru, there were violent protests in July that stopped privatization, and the same in Paraguay. And people will recall that in Mexico, as the government planned to build an airport on the outskirts of Mexico City, farmers led mass protest that defeated the government's plans. So throughout Latin America, the people are rising up. They are stating that they have had enough. They have had enough of the plans of the IMF. They have had enough of prosperity on their backs. They have had enough of the lack of social services. They recognize that they are the ones who create the wealth and that they are being dispossessed of all that is rightly theirs. And that is where the aspirations are of the people of Brazil. When three-quarters of the population vote against the ruling Social Democratic Party that has been hand-in-hand with the International Monetary Fund and the international banking institutions, three-quarters of the Brazilian voters voted against the IMF, voted against these plans. And what they want is not Lula to manage austerity. They want the Lula who led the huge demonstrations that created the Workers' Party, who is the man of labor, a spokesperson of the aspirations of the working people.
And that is why Otravalo declares, how is it possible, in open contradiction with the years of struggle of the PT rank and file, in the unions, in the streets, in the parliament, strikes and demonstrations against the policies of the IMF, how is it possible that our candidate has adopted the very positions of our oppressors? It is necessary to mobilize widely and say no to the accords with the IMF, we will prevent it. Not the people who are going to be oppressed, but the rulers who are going to be displaced. Even before the elections, they want to decide the policies of the next government and to rob our nation of decisions over its destiny. We in Otrabajo, we in the Coot, we in the workers' movement will take up this struggle with thousands of PT members in support of the statement, break with the IMF, against the electoral alliance with the right-wing Liberal Party, respect the needs of the workers and the overwhelming majority of our people. We are going to win. We are going to defeat Cardoso and the IMF and the presidential candidates who are committed up to their necks with the defense of the interests of the elites and the multinational capital that flays our country, unquote. And Maya, in the Financial Times on October 6th, Joseph Stiglitz writes, "The disastrous consequences of instability. This world is now prone to financial crisis more than ever. More than ever, officials of the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank better remind themselves of that as they prepare for their annual meetings next week. With the collapse of Argentina and Brazil and Turkey, we are near the brink. In the past 12 months, we have once again underlined our failure to tackle basic problems. It is not just the countries in near crisis that are disillusioned. Throughout Latin America, where liberalization, this is the Financial Times of London, throughout Latin America, where liberalization, privatization, and stabilization have proceeded apace, the countries are sinking into poverty and disaster while they wait for a promised reward that will never come. The growth of the 1990s is over. And the increased labor market has brought labor wages, lower wages, but not lower expectations," the article continues.
If you would like a copy of today's program or any of our other programs, please contact us at taking aim at pacbell.net or at 707-552-9995. Ralph?
Maya, we cannot defend our interests by supplicating corporate rulers to be good citizens or to be nice and refrain from exploiting working people. That is the lesson of the Workers' Party in Brazil. That is the meaning of the struggle of the rank and file of the workers in Brazil. That is the task before our own workers as we confront the rulers who will impose war, who will terrorize us with their repression, and who will seek to prevent, as they are doing with the dock workers on the West Coast, the mass of our people, defend their survival, defend their interests, and join in a struggle from Brazil to Iraq to South Africa for a removal of this system of gangsterism that is capitalism today.
You've been listening to Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Will be with you next week.
That was Taking Aim with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen. Their contact information, once again, on the internet is takingaim@pacbell, PACBELL.net, or you could phone them at 707-552-9995. And they'll be back with us next week, next Tuesday at 5 p.m. Be sure to tune in tomorrow at 5 p.m. for Exploration, Science and Peace Issues with Dr. Michio Kaku. Coming up at 6 p.m. will be a report of the day's news with the WBAI news team. At 7 o'clock, Tahrir, Voices of the Middle East at Home and Abroad with Dr. Barbara Nimri Aziz, your host for this evening and every edition, just about every edition of Tahrir. And at 8 o'clock, a 4-minute That is a four-minute national election coverage news brief, and we hope that you'll keep your dial tuned for that. 299.5 FM. At 8:05, the Asia Pacific Forum from 8 until 9 p.m., taking us right up until 9 o'clock. There will be another news brief throughout the evening, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, and then at 11 o'clock, there will be 4-minute news briefs on the elections in New York and around the country. WBAI will be providing local team coverage of today's election at 9 p.m. Jazz Sampler with Bill Farrar, usually heard at 9, from 9 until 11, will be preempted this evening. And if you're still with us, you're still following along, regular programming will resume at midnight with the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade with Bill Weinberg. Please stay tuned and keep your dial right here at 99.5 FM, and you can connect with us on the internet at WBAI.org. In the background, taking us right up until 6 p.m., Mulgrew Miller and Wingspan from the CD The Sequel, and that's on the Max Jazz Piano series. Coming up next, the WBAI Evening News. Please stay tuned.
Good evening. In the news tonight, it's election.